InfoWars.com studios. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, October the 12th, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at what's going on in Saudi Arabia. You know, it was Stalin who said, a million deaths are a statistic and one death is a tragedy. This death of a journalist in Saudi Arabia, well, actually it was in Turkey. He is a Saudi journalist. He's been in exile. He's actually been living in the U.S. and reporting for the Washington Post. And this is a story that's been developing over the last couple of days. We now have some new sensational details that have come out. And that's a key part of this. You know, we have a story about a journalist who has disappeared. And we have, as some people have described it, a kind of pulp fiction murder and dismemberment. Now information has come out that his Apple Watch may have actually recorded the murder. There was very, very strong circumstantial evidence. Going back all the way to Tuesday, we had Senator Bob Corker saying that they were going to, that they had very strong evidence. They believed that the Saudis had been behind the murder of this individual and had covered it up. And we have people on every side of the aisle, every side of the issue now coming out and saying that Saudi Arabia has to answer for this. When you got people like Lindsey Graham, who is always a warmonger, always pushing for war in the Middle East, always arming terrorist organizations like the Saudi government. You know, they're head choppers, but there are head choppers working for our political agenda. So let's give them lots of money and arms and so forth. But of course, they've had their hooks into the U.S. ever since Kissinger and Nixon put them in charge of our currency with the petrodollar. They've had outsized influence with us. And then back at 9/11, the CIA and the Saudi intelligence agencies were working hand in glove with 9/11. You can't tell where the CIA ends and where the CIA and the Saudis end with each other. The two of them are joined at the hip. It is a snake where you can't tell where the head and where the tail is. And so even though they blamed 9/11 on Saudi hijackers, nothing was allowed to happen to them or to the Saudis. And that got a lot of the families of victims very upset. Not only the lies, but the fact they couldn't get any compensation. So that's something that's been unrolling in the last couple of years. But not even that made any difference. We're going to tell you why it appears that this has now changed. Because Prince Bandar has been at the center of starting this war with Yemen, and this has gone on now for over 3.5 years. We've had over 13,000 people killed, about 3,000 of them children. Just a few days ago, we had a Yemen school bus attacked by the Saudis. They admitted it. They said there was no excuse for it. It was an accident. Well, it wasn't an accident when you started that war. And it's been described as Saudi Arabia's Vietnam. Now, Rand Paul has been speaking out about this for a very long time. And he has taken the opportunity to talk about this journalist and saying it's time that we cut the arms sales to Saudi Arabia and we cut these ties. But you've got even people like Lindsey Graham. So stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Found it. InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, October the 12th, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. Got a lot of news. We've got big pharmaceutical news, we've got vaccine news, and we've got more censorship news. We've had Facebook purging about 800 different news sites. Now, a lot of them are, of course, conservative or libertarian. Not all of them are even Trump supporters. They just support liberty, but they have to be purged by Facebook. And all this happened just within the last couple of days. I'm going to give you an update on that, give you a list of some of the different outlets. As I said, not all of them are Trump supporters, but they do push back against big government. And that should tell you something about where this is coming from. Because we have to understand that this is not about Democrats and a Democrat-leaning Silicon Valley. Folks, this is about the establishment, Republican and Democrat, pushing back against anybody who challenges their power. Now, of course, President Trump and people who support President Trump fall within that realm. But it also includes people who don't support President Trump, who are speaking out against big government, against the surveillance state, for example, which President Trump doesn't talk about much. He seems to be okay with that. And so you've got a lot of these news organizations very big in terms of pushing back against the surveillance state, pushing back against the Bilderberg Group and other things like that, being censored because the Republicans are pushing censorship just as much as the Democrats are. And these individual companies like Facebook, like Google, venture capitalists from DARPA, from the CIA, that were funding these corporations for this very purpose as the internet became practical in the late 1990s. The internet was designed as a tool of mind control. They made it free. They made it open. We got an opening there and things took off a little bit faster than they wanted it to. And people started waking up, and so they've got to do this now in the open instead of doing it gradually. And so they are really lowering the hammer of censorship on people across the spectrum who don't support the globalist agenda, who don't support big government, who don't support the surveillance state, because they are the surveillance state. These social media companies are the surveillance state. They must pull this thing in and pull it in now. And so we've got now another 800 different pages on Facebook being shut down all at once. All at once. We're also going to talk about what's going on in Yemen. A very sensationalist situation going on with the journalist there. It may have big geopolitical consequences. And it's about time. Because the Saudis have been involved in a lot of horrible things. Sponsoring terrorism, starting the war in Yemen that has continued to go on. And now, because of the gruesome death of one journalist, people are starting to wake up. And it's kind of interesting because a lot of these neocons, I mean, you got even people like Lindsey Graham and Max Boot. Max Boot, of all people. This never-Trumper neocon is saying, well, you know, we need to take a look at Saudi Arabia, maybe cut back on this. And we're going to tell you why all these people have turned on the clown prince. Mohammed bin Salman. Yeah, he is a bit of a clown. This is a guy, whenever they have big issues in Saudi Arabia, he goes shopping. You know, goes by his villa, he gets multiple yachts and so forth. And with all the infrastructure problems that we're facing Saudi Arabia and the dire future that they're looking at as everybody is turning against oil, he decides he'll go shopping. Hey, I got an idea. I'll go to America and I'll talk to Apple and all these different companies and we will set up a city to be in place by, guess what? Their favorite date of all of the globalists, 2030. By 2030, it's going to have this self-driving robot city in Saudi Arabia. And so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about his phony reforms about women driving and being allowed to go to movie theaters. I've talked about this many times, how that is nothing other than a head fake. A head fake. Why would he arrest the female activists who are pushing for women to be allowed to drive, if he's going to open everything up. And of course, he made a big presentation about it in Washington and Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, their capital, at the same time, on the same day. Oh, look, we're going to let women drive. Aren't you proud of us? And everybody was so proud of them. All of the Democrats who are out there pushing the Handmaid's Tale, saying, look at this, all these conservatives want to create the Handmaid's Tale here in America. And it's like, you got something far worse with your allies and this religious political institution called Islam that you love so much. Take a look at what that looks like when it's implemented in Saudi Arabia. And you got all these people like Hillary Clinton lifting up Islam to us as a model for the future. And they're far worse than anything that could be imagined by these feminists with Handmaid's Tale. But he's arresting these activists as he's with on the one hand, while with the other hand, he's telling everybody, look, we're going to let women drive. But of course, they can't drive without the permission of a male. I mean, this is the way this guy operates. Real quickly, some of the economic news. We've had markets bounce back, which is good. They continued to decline yesterday. Over the last 2 days, the Dow has lost 5.2%. The S&P 500 shed 2% yesterday. The NASDAQ dropped an additional 1.3%, getting close to a 10% decline for the year. I said investors are selling off some tech stocks to get rid of the riskiest assets. And, of course, that would be things like Facebook. Just as I said, Facebook is out there purging pages that have millions and millions of followers. Why would you do that if you want to make a profit, right? Why would you cut your own throat? You got Twitter out there suggesting people that you might want to unfollow. I mean, I've been pestered by Twitter when, you know, oh, this person is following you, or maybe you want to follow this person or whatever. Now they're suggesting people to unfollow. And as I tweeted out yesterday, I've seen some very interesting stats on Twitter, which I haven't really been that active in lately. And they're going in and deleting my tweets. I looked in and I saw, wow, there's two or three tweets on this day, another two or three tweets that day. Yesterday, they deleted 22 of my tweets. I don't know where they are. I just saw a third-party metric that was following what was going on there, and I tweeted that out with a screenshot of that. Over the previous 2 days, they have deleted 500 of my followers. It's like, what's going on with this? And then on Facebook, you got hundreds, about 800 political pages deleted with millions and millions of followers. Why are these companies doing this? It's because they don't care about profits. They are pushing to have a political agenda. Now, you might say that they're looking at profits in the long run, because we've had the story that's up on the Drudge Report today, how the New York Times says pretty soon we're going to just be getting rid of paper and we're going to be totally digital. We'll be on the internet. And so when you look at that, you understand that part of the reason for the purge of alternative media is because outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post have been hammered in the digital sphere, in cyberspace, on social media, because people look at their stuff and don't agree with it and say that they don't agree with it. That's people exercising their free speech and having the opportunity to experience a free press instead of a press that's controlled by two or three big newspapers and three big broadcasters, ABC, CBS, NBC, and a couple of giant cable networks. If you can get out of the little ghetto, as Matt Drudge called it, that they create with these major media companies, big newspapers, the big broadcasters, the big cable companies, if you can get out of that and experience a free press and then be able to comment on what you see in the free press with your free speech, I agree with this, I disagree with that, these guys are done. So they've got to purge the sphere. They've got to, even in their long-term business model. Of course, a big part of the business model is to make sure that they're doing exactly what the governments want them to do. And that's what the Democrats and Republicans want them to do here. But also to make sure that they don't have any competition from the free press so they can monetize the New York Times.
I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and
Welcome back. I'm going to talk about the sensational murder situation in Saudi Arabia, as well as a censorship that has just landed on Facebook, taking out another 800 news organizations. As we said when this happened to InfoWars, if they get away with doing it to a very high-profile organization like InfoWars and Alex Jones, they will do it to everybody. And now they are doing it to everybody. Everybody that is against big government, against the surveillance state. A lot of these people are not even necessarily Trump supporters. They oppose Trump on many different issues. What they oppose is big government. What they oppose is the surveillance state. And folks, that is exactly what social media is. It is the surveillance state. It is the eyes and the ears of the surveillance state. And now it has become the fist in your face. Have you had enough? This is not about private companies exercising their private rights. This is about censorship. And free speech is a human right. We have governments to protect our human rights, and we better have a government that's going to protect our human rights against this kind of censorship. Even if it's done by a giant corporation, it's not a good thing. And we have to remind the left of that from time to time. And we have to remind our politicians, and that needs to be an issue. And isn't it interesting that with an election coming up and with all this censorship happening everywhere, that this is not an issue that you hear your Republicans talking about? They're not talking about it. You had Marco Rubio not talking about it. "I don't even know who you are," he said to Alex Jones. "I don't go to your website." "Oh, well, you know that he's got a website. Maybe you know who he is." He eventually admitted that he was lying. But the purpose of those hearings was not to stop censorship. It was to make sure that the censors were working for them and not for the Chinese in America or elsewhere. And they have now come out and said, you know, we're going to work for the Chinese in China, and we're going to work, presumably, for Rubio in America and for Hillary. Anybody that doesn't toe the line of the establishment parties, they will work for in terms of censoring. And that's what we're seeing now with this massive purge of hundreds of people. So we have more to say about that, but I want to talk a little bit about some health news first. There are a couple of important things that happened in the middle of the week. We had the Senate defeating a move by the Democrats to try to overturn Trump's expansion of non-Obamacare plans. So let's talk about this, because it's a lot of negatives there. It's a little bit, he tried to have some plans that were not Obamacare. And then they tried to overturn the not Obamacare plans. Basically, what he did was he put out some choice. He said, you want a different insurance plan? Are you going to keep your insurance plan? We'll let you keep your insurance plan. Remember when we were told that by Obama? Remember when they put together that bill and they called it the Affordable Health Care? Well, all those things were lies. They weren't going to let you keep your health care plan. And it wasn't affordable for anybody who was paying for it. It's not even affordable for the taxpayers who are subsidizing it for other people. It's going to be unsustainable. We're going to go down the road of other socialist countries if we do this, because it's not sustainable. And so what Trump and the Republicans did was to expand healthcare options. They gave us choice. And so then the Democrats, who say that they are pro-choice, came in to take away your choice on insurance plans. They're not pro-choice folks about anything other than killing children. They don't care if they're not going to give you a choice about how you educate your child, how you vaccinate your child. The only thing that they will do is help you to kill your child, and they want you to choose to kill your child. That's the only thing that the Democrats are pro-choice on. They don't want you to have any choice about your health care or your insurance. They're going to tell you what you're going to get and how much you're going to pay. And they're going to work with big insurance companies to make sure that the big insurance companies and the big pharmaceutical companies are taken care of. And so the Democrats tried to overturn the additional little choices that the Republicans put in. And this is what has happened now, because the Republicans have fought any efforts to get rid of Obamacare. Now they have another wedge issue that can come up in every election. And it's going to be this little bit of tug of war back and forth between Republicans and Democrats about which little bits of health freedom you're going to have and which ones are going to take away. It's going to be a battle between free choice and free stuff. And you know which party is going to be on which side. But they're not really going to give you a free choice. They're going to keep their control of your health care in Washington, and we'll have to get involved and vote for me or vote for this other guy to get what you want out of Washington. They're not going to let you take that decision back. And that's the Republicans. People like Paul Ryan. People like Paul Ryan had been set up with Mitt Romney to take away your health choice because Mitt Romney had already done it in Massachusetts working with Ted Kennedy. And so they're not going to give you your health care choice back. They're going to fight over these types of things. But they were fighting over the little scraps, you know, the tug of war where they go back and forth and they never let go of the rope. The Democrat measure would have overruled Trump's expansion of short-term health insurance plans. You know, President Trump has been trying to get rid of this. It's the Congress that's a problem. He was able to get the establishment Republicans to carve out a little bit of freedom. But like I said, they're not going to let go of health care out of Washington. Not going to do that. Not the Republicans. So this is the best that we can get. And even on that, the Democrats are going to fight that. So they expanded short-term health insurance plans. And it was defeated very narrowly. You had Susan Collins, that everybody is so excited about because she voted for Kavanaugh, joining the Democrats to take away your choice on insurance plans. Susan Collins voting with the Democrats in favor of overturning choice in insurance plans. She says she's pro-choice on abortion. Yeah, she wants you to choose abortion, but not choose your health care plan. That's Susan Collins, Republican of Maine. And we also had a very important victory in terms of President Trump signing a bill that lifts the gag orders that have been put on pharmacists on drug prices. Again, showing the power of big pharma. The president on Wednesday signed legislation that will allow pharmacists to tell you if you can get cheaper drugs. For years, most pharmacists couldn't give customers a clue about an easy way to save money on prescription drugs. They were prohibited. They were gagged. You see, this is what's called regulatory capture. When the pharmaceutical companies have this kind of power, when the pharmaceutical companies can go to Reagan in 1986 and say, give us legal immunity for vaccines. People are suing us because our vaccines are harming them. So give us legal immunity. Okay, all right. Then they say, we don't want pharmacists to be able to tell people if they can get a cheaper alternative. Okay, whatever you want, whatever you want, sure. That's called regulatory capture. It's not capitalism. Capitalism hasn't failed. Freedom of choice in healthcare has not failed. We don't need to have the government controlling healthcare because it just doesn't work if everybody has a free market. No, we haven't had a free market. The pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies and the doctors have been controlling everything. And it is fascism. It is crony capitalism. And this illustrates why that's the case. When the cash price for a prescription is less than what you would pay using your insurance plan, pharmacists had to keep that a secret. But no more. President Trump signed a bill on Wednesday to take that gag order away. Isn't that amazing that they could do that? You know what we need to do? We need to audit the Fed. And we need to audit the CDC. And we need to audit and end the FDA. And we need to audit and end the war on drugs and the DEA. None of those things are constitutional. The CDC and the Fed are private.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I was just telling you that President Trump this week, President Trump, the Republicans beat back efforts by the Democrats and Susan Collins to take away just a little bit of choice that we've been graciously handed back as a breadcrumb after Obama and the Democrats took all of our choice away in terms of health insurance. We had a little bit of freedom that was carved out and Democrats and Susan Collins tried to take that, even that back. And they were beaten back. It was close. It was 50-50. And then President Trump signed a bill to lift gag orders that have been put on pharmacists to tell you if you can save money by getting a generic. That was prohibited by the federal government. How far have we gotten out of the Constitution when they can do this type of thing? They have absolutely no authority under the Constitution to put gag orders on pharmacists. They have no authority to tell us what we can put into our body. There is no authority for a federal drug authority, the FDA. Federal Drug Administration. Stop calling it an administration. I call it the Federal Drug Authoritarians. Change all these agencies that end with an A. Just change them to authoritarians. They don't have authority. They're just authoritarians. There's no authority under the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. They have no authority to do these types of things. There's no authority for the entire war on drugs, but there certainly isn't any authority for them to dictate medicine to us from the federal government. We've accepted that for a number of years. Now they're telling us even what kind of insurance plans we can have. The Democrats and Susan Collins are fine with that. So they beat that back. Here's a victory for freedom of choice coming out of Norway. The Supreme Court of Norway set a precedent allowing a doctor who was fired because she refused to do an abortion. She's a Christian. She said, I became a doctor to save life, not to destroy it. And they fired her in Norway. She appealed it, and the Supreme Court set a new precedent for conscientious objection. You know, it's protected even under international law. But, of course, they don't care because it's just written on a piece of paper, just like the Ninth and Tenth Amendment are written on a piece of paper. First Amendment, just a piece of paper. If you don't really understand why it's there, if you don't value it enough to fight for it, fortunately, this doctor in Norway did. And she has now been reinstated by the Supreme Court there because she refused to do an abortion. And I'll just mention while we're talking about that, and we're talking about abortion, and we're talking about the phony paradigm of choice that is attached to that. As I did the interview earlier this week with Felim McAleer, Irish journalist who, with another journalist, did a book about Kermit Gosnell. Now they have done a movie about it. In spite of all the censoring and banning by Facebook, won't allow them to run ads. NPR won't allow them to run ads. And, of course, NPR is not a private organization. They get taxpayer funding, but that's okay because it is a political thing. They can do whatever they want and get away with it. And it is a movie they call it Gosnell. It's opening today. Make sure you go and see that. Support them. Even Kickstarter kicked them off. When they got so low that they kicked them, just like Eric Holder said, kick them. And Kickstarter kicked them right off of Kickstarter. They were able to raise millions of dollars on Indiegogo, get the drama made. It's not a documentary, folks. I mean, it would be probably not something you could stand to see if they actually did a documentary on it. It's very, very gruesome what Kermit Gosnell did. And he is serving multiple life sentences for murders of babies who are born alive very late term. One of them, 30 weeks old. 30 weeks old. And he cynically said, that baby could walk to the bus stop, and he kills it. And he also caused the death of a woman. An immigrant, a woman of color, and he still got a pass for quite a while. If you see this movie, you see the drama about, it's a courtroom drama where they talk about the politics of this as much as anything. It's not gruesome, it's PG-13. Dean Cain, who played Superman on television, is one of the stars in it. And so it's not a documentary, it doesn't get into the gruesome aspects of it, but you can see how difficult it was for even a murderer to get to be brought to trial because of abortion. He was getting immunity because of abortion. Let's talk a little bit about other kinds of immunity here. You know, when I went over to get my coffee this morning, I went in and Fox News is on television. I heard Brian Kilmeade repeating this propaganda from the CDC and the Associated Press. 100,000 kids in the United States don't have any vaccination against very dangerous diseases. Life-threatening diseases, said Brian Kilmeade, like measles. Come on, Brian. You weren't born yesterday. You're old enough to know that measles is not a fatal disease. Yes, people can die from anything, anything. So why don't you start campaigning about bathtub removal? Because people die in bathtubs, Brian. Stop being a propagandist for big pharmaceutical companies. I know that's where you get most of your money. On Fox. But stop lying to people. Stop the lies. AP. An estimated, this is very key, an estimated 100,000 children, isn't that a nice, interesting round number, have not had vaccinations of any of the 14 diseases that the CDC says you've got to get vaccinated for. And so the CDC, the largest seller of vaccines, said this is pretty concerning. It's something we need to understand better, and we need to reduce that. This estimate, they said, says the AP, their propaganda outlet, is based on finding that in 2017, 1.3% of the children born in 2015 were completely unvaccinated. And the Associated Propagandists, AP, are astounded at this. They said young children are especially vulnerable to complications from vaccines. Oh, no, I'm sorry. From vaccine preventable diseases. Yes, yeah. Yeah, they're also susceptible to complications from vaccines, but the AP won't say that. Brian Kilmeade won't say that either. Some of which can be fatal. That's right. Just had some kids die in Samoa. I'm going to tell you what's going on in China with vaccines as well. The researchers didn't ask. This is the Associated Propagandists. The researchers didn't ask why parents didn't get their kids vaccinated. And this is a surprise because a government program pays for vaccines for uninsured children. We don't understand why. Why would that happen? Well, maybe we could do some research. Because for 32 years, Health and Human Services was tasked with doing vaccine research so they could improve the safety and effectiveness of vaccines. And when Del Bigtree and RFK Jr. asked them, what have you found over the last 32 years? They refused to give any information under the Freedom of Information Act. So they had to be sued by RFK Jr. And when they sued them and won in court, the court says, yeah, that's what the Freedom of Information Act says. It says that they have freedom of information and you got to turn it over. All right, finally, we'll turn it over. That's the way these people always act, government agencies. When they turned it over, they found that they had collected nothing. They said, well, we didn't give you anything because we haven't got anything. They wouldn't say that. But then when the court ordered them, they said, well, we don't have any documents to give you. Because for the last 32 years, even though Health and Human Services has been tasked with monitoring vaccine safety and making suggestions about how they could improve it, they did nothing. Nothing. And so they're surprised that parents don't get their kids vaccinated. What is going on isn't clear, says the Associated Propagandists, AP. Well, let's explain what's going on here. In China, you have beaten, terrified, and disappeared. China cracks down on protesters of faulty vaccines. It's being reported by The Guardian. They said there's fears for the safety of a woman campaigning about China's defective vaccines, with activists saying she's been missing for more than 40 days. Authorities have been clamping down on families that demand redress over hundreds of thousands of doses issued by the government. Following revelations in July that a state-sponsored vaccine program had been using faulty serum, this woman who's now missing, Tan Hua, 38, disappeared. She was actually with another campaigner. They were protesting in Tiananmen Square in September. And the other protester who was with her said, some 10 or 20 men in plain clothes surrounded us and caught Tan. I was trying to make calls to other activists for help. She disappeared. They haven't seen her for 40 days. That's the way the Chinese handle vaccines. That's the way it'll be handled in America before too much longer. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I've got one more thing to say about what's going on with vaccines in China, because it is very telling what we see going on internationally. This is not just a Chinese situation. Even The Guardian, which will typically is a leftist publication, they'll typically push back against any concerns that people have about vaccines. They don't want you exercising your informed consent. Just like climate change, they say the science is settled. Well, you know what? A scientist, a real scientist, will tell you that science is never settled. All breakthroughs in science come when somebody questions conventional wisdom. That has historically been true. It'll always be true. Science should be based on skepticism, not on groupthink. But yet, even here, China will talk about the brutal authoritarian tactics of the Chinese government. But it only differs in degree to what's being done against people who want to have informed consent in health care in the West. Whether we're talking about America or we're talking about Australia or New Zealand or Samoa, the same thing is always true. Or the UK. And so we're going to get back to that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the massive sale that we're having at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program, this operation. We got hundreds of more people that have been censored now today off of Facebook, mostly conservative, not all Trump supporters, some liberal organizations. But again, it's just the arbitrary censorship of the media. It was brought against InfoWars first, and it has been the most broadly based against InfoWars, the most number of social media sites, as well as now the push by PayPal and others to try to take away our ability to even process the stuff that we sell ourselves. Because they can't organize an advertiser boycott of us. They want to take away our ability to give you quality health products to take care of your health and your family's health. So we're fighting back. We've got a massive sale at InfoWarsStore.com. 50% off of all InfoWars Life products. We've never had that kind of discount that broadly combined with free shipping. We've never done that before. 50% off plus free shipping on products like BrainForce Plus, my favorite supplement that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Also, Secret 12, our vitamin B12. You can get the same effect that you would with a vitamin B12 shot, but you can take it orally. It's very nice tasting, and you don't have to get a shot. Secret 12, 50% off with free shipping. Super Blue, our fluoride-free toothpaste. It doesn't have fluoride. It has the good halogen, iodine, and it has nano silver to fight bacteria as well as viruses. And of course, bacteria creates gum disease. That leads to tooth loss as well as even to heart disease. You can fight all that with a nano silver and super blue fluoride free toothpaste. You can get it 50% off for free shipping. We have many other products from bone broth to super male vitality to alpha power, real red pill, silver bullet, knockout, our sleep aid, all of these 50% off with free shipping at InfoWarsStore.com. Check it out. We really do need and appreciate your support. All right, let's go back to this story about what's happening in China. Now, you got people there very upset because in July there was a massive problem with vaccines. Hundreds of thousands of doses, a lot of families, a lot of children injured in vaccines. People got very upset about it. It's the largest, one of the largest public health scandals to hit China since they discovered back in 2008 that they had tainted baby formula that was being provided to babies. Caused a great deal of harm to babies in 2008. This company, Changxing Biotech, was found to have sold 250,000 defective vaccines. It also fabricated inspections dating back to 2014. Another major vaccine maker, state-owned Wuhan Institute of Biological Products, was also producing faulty inoculations for infants. Now, is this something that can't happen in the United States? Of course it can. The CDC is the biggest seller of vaccines. And, of course, our government is hiding information about what happens to vaccines in our country. They don't do any inspection of this. And if anybody says I was harmed by a vaccine, if they know about it, there is a vaccine court. But you don't get true due process. You don't get as much due process as Brett Kavanaugh did, quite frankly. If you've been harmed by vaccine companies, they're being protected by the federal government, have been since 1986. And oh, by the way, when we get into this fight about 5G, all of the cell phone companies and cell phone towers have been protected against any health effects that they cause based on a 1996 Telecommunications Act that was put in by Bill Clinton. 10 years after that protection of the vaccine industry, they protected the telecommunications industry. They don't care. If they harm you, they're going to be protected. And so in China, you have a 250,000 vaccines defective, a state-owned company making faulty vaccines for infants. This woman who has disappeared claims that she was victim of a defective rabies vaccine in 2014, and she's been protesting since then. She was in a group of at least 9 other protesters who were detained when they were protesting in Beijing's Tiananmen Square in early September at the time of a China-Africa summit in the capital. See, that would be very embarrassing for the Chinese government because they're trying to make big inroads into Africa. They want to be the neo-colonial power there in Africa, part of their Road and Belt program. They probably want to sell them a lot of vaccines as well. And so they had another campaigner, He Feng Mai. He is actually a woman. And then we're not talking about trannies here. This is, she is a man. President Xi is a man. And this protester, he is a woman. I love the Chinese. We adopted a Chinese daughter. It's just they have a different name for everything, you know? It's kind of confusing. Anyway, this woman named He was with another woman named Tan at the time, and they said some 10 or 20 men in plain clothes surrounded us and caught Tan. I was trying to make calls to other activists to help us. He says her daughter became partially paralyzed after receiving one of the substandard vaccines discovered this year and was then sent back home to the province of Hainan. Now, why would the Western powers think that this could never happen here? As a matter of fact, at the same time this was discovered in China in July, there were two children who died immediately after they were vaccinated in Samoa. So one child, both of these children were about a year old. The nurse injects one child and the child dies within minutes. The parents say they're going to continue injecting kids with these vaccines. And the parents of this one child said, no, you're not. We don't want that. They berated them, and then they did it without their consent. Did it forcefully. And that child died within minutes. So it became a big scandal. They pulled all the vaccines off of the market, and then the Samoan government, after they consulted with their big pharmaceutical master, said, there's no problem with the vaccines. It must be those nurses. And I agree that the nurse, especially the second nurse, had culpability in that. But the problem is, not, you're going to ignore the pharmaceutical companies, you're going to ignore the vaccines, you're going to ignore the hospital's liability and all this, you're going to come after the nurses. This is the way this works, folks. We got to wake up to this. They're literally killing people and getting away with it. And then when they put up a billboard in New Zealand, because New Zealand, the people there are aware of what's going on in Samoa. They put up a billboard and said, know the risk, and they show a man holding a baby. The man's heavily tattooed on his arm, implying that he's Maori. And they said, how dare you? How dare you tell these poor, that's racist of you to try to tell these Maori people not to get vaccinated. It's like, no, we're trying to protect them. We're trying to tell them to know the risk, get informed before you give your consent or before people inject your child without your consent. That's standing up for the Maoris. That's not taking away anything from them. This is the way these big corporations are having their way with us. And the same thing is happening on social media. I'm going to get to that in the next hour. Since we just got about a minute left, you know, we have the massive hurricane that's come through Florida. And we have Bill Nelson, who is in a virtual tie with Governor Rick Scott. The Democrat Senator Bill Nelson is running for re-election. The Republican Governor Rick Scott is tied with him neck and neck in a race that's coming up in just a couple of weeks. So Bill Nelson tries to reap the whirlwind. He tries to use this hurricane to make money in a fundraiser. So he's putting out a bunch of tweets, and the tweets are being redone through Act Blue, a major fundraising tool for the Democrat Party. And let's hope that he does reap the whirlwind of voters' wrath when they go to the polls. But again, he's out there saying the earth is heating up because of global warming, and it's all the Republicans' fault. As Climate Depot, Mark Moreno, I've talked to him frequently, put out, there's a death wish going on from climate activists who said Florida needs more hurricanes so we can wake people up to global warming. And one of the people, ironically, who's putting that out is Michael Mann, the guy who got caught in ClimateGate saying we've got to hide the decline and then refused to turn over his emails or his research. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Kanye West going to the White House and talking to President Trump. And we had Don Lemon making amazing comments. We'll get to that in a little bit here. But amazing comments saying, calling Kanye House Negro and saying it was a minstrel show. And he wasn't talking about himself or CNN. He was actually talking about Kanye and the White House. But we had another story that involved race, that involved Black Lives Matter and so forth, that came out the last couple of days that hasn't gotten much attention. I've had it on my desk here for a couple of days. Running back for the New Orleans Saints, Alvin Kamara, wore a Kaepernick jersey to the stadium, and he also wore a Make Africa Home Again hat. And he has, I don't know exactly what he's trying to say about that. His mother is a Liberian immigrant. And, of course, Liberia is pretty much controlled by black slaves that were repatriated to Liberia by... after they were freed in colonial America, they were repatriated. Again, it was the paternalism of the people who had slaves at the time that said, well, they can't survive here in America, and they will be attacked and so forth. So we'll put them back, send them back to Africa. So I think it's kind of interesting, this guy who is a Liberian, his mother is a Liberian immigrant, says, make Africa home again. Well, he can go back. He's welcome to go back anytime he wants to go. He wants to go there. You know, they pretty much have dominated Liberia, the people who were repatriated from America, ever since they came back. But, if we want to look at what's going on in Africa, you know, we were told anytime you look at this and you talk about what's going on there, you know, that's this racist to take a look at it. You know, he might be able to get some kind of a football league going on there. It may be the soccer kind of football, he could call it the African National Conference or something, you know, the ANC. He could get the go to Rwanda. Maybe they could get the Hutus and the Tutsis who are trying to commit genocide against each other, both of them black. Maybe he could get them to do it more congenially with sports or something. But when we look at the ANC in South Africa, and we talk about the fact that they are trying to commit white genocide, then they push back. They call us racist. They call President Trump when he talks about it. They call him a conspiracy theorist. And yet this week, we had the king of the Zulu nation in South Africa join with the white Afrikaners against the black communists. Because that's really what the issue is here, folks. It's the communists. They're using the beard of racism just as the Democrats use it here in America. They're saying, oh, these people, they're racist, so, you know, whatever we do to them is justified. So they're saying the same thing in South Africa. Oh, they're white, therefore they're racist, therefore they stole this land from us. No, they didn't. They didn't steal any land from the Zulus. The Zulus have had their land and always had their land. The Afrikaners, the Boers, have been there as long as Europeans have been in America. They've been there for 400 years, and they've grown that area. And so the Zulu king, and they're the largest ethnic group in South Africa, the Zulus, he came out in support of the white farmers, the Afrikaners, the Boers. And he said, the Zulu nation I'm talking about will not exist if we don't have food, says the Zulu king. That's why I say farmers must come closer so that we discuss what we can do when we talk about agriculture and the availability of enough food in the land. That's why I'm asking Afroforum and of the Boers to come and help us. He wants to work with the Boers. Why? Because the communists don't create anything. They can't grow food. They're going to destroy these farms. They're going to have massive famine. When they confiscate this, they want to justify this and kill all the white farmers. They're out there chanting, kill the Boer, kill the white man. And then the American press says, you're a bunch of racists and this is a conspiracy theory. It doesn't exist. Well, the Zulu king says it does. The Zulu king says when the government started talking about the appropriation of land, expropriation without compensation, the Boers put down their tools. And there will be no food in South Africa if we don't stand with them. He says, you're not going to get anything from us unless you come here and commit to me that you will never touch the land. Communists, ANC communists. Stay with us. Be right back.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
We're going to have Dwight Mitchell joining us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about CPS abuses, Child Protective Services, and how they kidnap children. They kidnap Dwight's child. At first he thought it was just an unusual circumstance, a case just involving him, and then he started to realize it was happening very broadly. And so he is fighting back. He is organizing a resistance against this because he realized that it wasn't just his particular case or one or two individuals at that particular local CPS that was doing it. It was very widespread there in Minnesota. And then he realized it wasn't just widespread in Minnesota. It is a national problem. And quite frankly, it is an international problem. And so we're talking to Dwight Mitchell at the bottom of the hour. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Saudi Arabia. There's been a sea change here in terms of the attitude towards our head-chopping allies. You know, it's always been the attitude here in America, especially with the neocons. Well, they're head-choppers, but there are head-choppers. And we don't care if they've started a civil war in Yemen. We don't care if they're funding terrorists, working with ISIS, working with Islamic jihadis. We don't care if they brutalize women. We don't care if they persecute other religions. There are head choppers, even though they publicly execute more people than ISIS has. But, of course, they also support ISIS. And our neocon establishment, Republican and Democrat, has always supported them. That has now changed. Why? Because of the death of one journalist. And it just underscores what Joseph Stalin said. A million people dying is a statistic. One person dying is a tragedy. And this particular death of this journalist, again, a journalist, if it's one person dying, it's a tragedy. If it is a journalist that dies, it's a big news story. Not always. There have been some high profile murders of other journalists. One lady in particular who was investigating corruption in the European Union, a Bulgarian journalist who was severely raped and beaten. And you haven't heard much about that. So there's something involved here other than just the high profile murder of an individual. And I think it has to do with who this clown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, is. And I think people have had enough of him. I think they realize that he is a very dangerous individual. He has made enemies inside Saudi Arabia, outside Saudi Arabia. And I think that has a lot to do with what's going on with this. But this is a journalist, Jamal Khashoggi. He is a Washington Post reporter working for them. He is a Saudi. And he was living in Turkey. He went to the embassy to get paperwork for a marriage and a divorce that he wanted to go through, a divorce and a subsequent marriage. Now, the new information that came out yesterday is that apparently his death, his murder, as the Turkish government was saying, they said he was murdered and we have strong circumstantial evidence of this. As early as Tuesday, we had Republican Senator Tom Cotton saying that he was convinced, based on what he had seen, that he had been murdered inside the Saudi embassy in Istanbul, Turkey. And now we have heard that actually his Apple Watch recorded his own murder. Gulf Institute Director Ali Al-Ahmed on Thursday spoke with reporters and said the Turkish government knows that Khashoggi was murdered, and they know when. The Turkish government, he said, has proof that Khashoggi is dead. They have audio of the incident. It was recorded from his Apple Watch that he was wearing, according to his iPhone. And so he left his iPhone in the car, parked. He was just going to go in and get some paperwork at the embassy. Left his iPhone in the car, along with his fiance, but he had his Apple Watch still on. Now, the Apple Watch has a range of about 100 meters, about 100 yards, under ideal circumstances. And so, evidently, they're saying that this was recorded. The Washington Post journalist appears to have had the presence of mind to activate it. The Apple Watch gave the specific time and location of the murder. They also know where the body parts were taken. The voice recording from inside the embassy lays out what happened to Jamal after he entered, said one person. You can hear his voice and the voices of men speaking Arabic. You can hear how he was interrogated, tortured, then murdered. A second person briefed on the recording said men could be heard beating Khashoggi. The journalist has long-standing ties to the Saudi royal family, but has written critically of the current government and of the Saudi clown prince, Mohammed bin Salman. It's not clear that U.S. officials have, whether they've seen the footage or listened to the audio, but Turkish officials have described their contents to American counterparts. Senator Cory Gardner, a Republican of Colorado, said arms sales are certainly going to be, I think, a huge concern if there is responsibility that is irrefutable. And so, again, we don't care. Nobody cared, really, except for Rand Paul. He's been opposing the war in Yemen for quite some time. Nobody cared about this three-and-a-half-year-old war that was started by the clown prince in Yemen. They don't care that 13,000 people were killed there. They don't care that 3,000 of those people killed were children. Those are just statistics. But if you have a journalist whose murder is recorded on his Apple Watch, that is a tragedy and a sensational tragedy at that. Just this week, we've had Reuters talking about the survivors of a school bus that was attacked by the Saudi forces there as part of that war against Yemen. In a small school in Yemen's Sada province, the absence of dozens of their classmates killed in an airstrike on a bus weighed heavily on young survivors as they returned to classes. They talked to a boy, 14, struggled to hold back tears as he recalled the friends that he lost in the attack by the Saudis. He said, "Their blood will not be in vain. We will avenge them by getting an education. We will avenge them by learning." Now, I wonder what they're going to learn. Are they going to turn into terrorists themselves? That's the problem. That's what happens with all of these wars. They radicalize everyone. He said, "I thank God for surviving the attack, that ugly crime." A 15-year-old says, "We are sad after we lost our dear schoolmates. We are worried that the enemy will strike the school, but we will continue our education." And then Reuters reports Saudi Arabia leads a coalition of Arab states fighting against the Iran-aligned Houthi movement that controls North Yemen. They said last month that the coalition accepted that the attack had killed dozens of people, including children, on the bus, and that it was unjustified. Nevertheless, the kingdom and its ally, the United Arab Emirates, receive Western political support, and they buy billions of dollars a year in arms from the U.S. and from Europe, including Britain and France. On Tuesday, Bob Corker said, and he is chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he said on Tuesday, "Everything points to the idea that Saudi journalist and legal U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi was murdered last week inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul." Now, the circumstantial evidence that we had seen prior to the information about this Apple Watch was had footage of 15 men who had come in on private jets. They saw them going into the embassy at the time that Khashoggi went in. I don't know, maybe he had an appointment so they knew that he would be there at the time. Saw them going in. They left, and he did not leave. And then they left on jets. They had two jets. The Turks tried to get there. They stopped one of the jets from leaving, but they didn't stop the other jet from leaving. And then they went back and they identified, based on the surveillance footage, the Turkish government identified these 15 men. They said they were all Saudi intelligence agents. As a matter of fact, one of the men that was seen leaving was identified as a guy who was an expert in forensic medicine. And what they are saying is that they believe that he was dismembered inside the Saudi embassy, cut up with a bone saw, just like Pulp Fiction. Again, sensational murder. Gets people very excited about this. But I think there is more to it than just this single murder. I think that MBS has, he captured all those Saudi royal family people, all these billionaires. One guy has had 60% of his wealth confiscated. They took them to the Ritz, because that's where you take Saudi billionaires to torture. I talked about this months ago. About putting on the Ritz. In fact, beyond Frankenstein, putting on the Ritz. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's been a little over a week since a Saudi, Jamal Khashoggi, who is living in the U.S., working for the Washington Post, a legal U.S. resident, but he was in Turkey at the time. He was getting papers. He went into the Saudi embassy. He disappeared, never to be seen again. We've had reports that surfaced yesterday saying that his death was recorded on his Apple Watch. The phone was left in his car with his fiance. And again, the Apple Watch has a distance of about 100 yards, and they're saying that they had a recording of his death there. The time of death, they heard him being beaten, heard him being interrogated, and never came out. And so there is, first we saw the footage of 15 people that the Turkish government alleged were Saudi intelligence. They said they had gone there. They went into that same building, stayed there for a while, and then they left, and he never came out. And so Erdogan is demanding that the Saudis produce proof that the missing journalist left the consulate alive as the murder probe intensified a few days ago. Now they're saying they have proof from this phone that he was actually interrogated, beaten, and murdered. As a matter of fact, one of the individuals, these 15 people that they identified as saying that they worked for Saudi intelligence, one of them was identified as an expert in post-mortem examinations, and they believe that he was there to dismember the body. They are saying that he was cut up with a bone saw, Pulp Fiction style. In the past, he has been very critical of the Saudi government, of the prince, Mohammed bin Salman in particular. Over the last few months, they were trying to lure him back. They were giving him offers of protection, even a high-level job if he would work for the government, if he would come back to Saudi Arabia. He was very skeptical. He told his friends, are you kidding me? I don't trust them one bit. And so former U.S. intelligence official noted that the details operation that involved sending two teams totaling 15 men and two private aircraft arriving and departing Turkey at different times bore the hallmarks of a rendition in which someone is extra-legally removed from one country and deposited for interrogation in another. But it appears to be far more than that. It appears to be a rendition, a rendering, I should say, what you do when you take an animal to the slaughterhouse to be cut into pieces. That appears to be the kind of rendering that was involved here. Rand Paul has come out and said the Saudis will keep killing civilians and journalists as long as we keep arming and assisting them. He tweeted this out. He said the president should immediately halt arms sales and military support to Saudi Arabia. And Rand Paul has been saying this for quite some time about Yemen. That's why he said killing civilians. Nobody cares if they kill tens of thousands of civilians, including children. But we care when it is one individual. That's just the nature of humankind, especially when it is a sensational murder like this. But he also wrote an op-ed piece that appears on Defense One. Stop military aid to Saudi Arabia, says Rand Paul. He says, by now you've seen the headlines, an American resident, a Saudi Arabian journalist who wrote for the Washington Post has gone missing and is presumed dead. As if we've never before had cause to doubt that the Saudis share America's values. For years, says Rand Paul, I have decried our country's involvement in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis are a state sponsor of radical Islam, and their war on Yemen, a poor Arab country, has led to many thousands of civilian deaths. The Saudis have provided at least 2,500 fighters to the Islamic State in Syria, making them the second largest source of foreign fighters for the group on a per capita basis after Tunisia. Rand Paul goes on to cite news reports from 2013 saying the Saudis offered more than 1,200 death row inmates a pardon and a monthly stipend for their families if they would go and fight the Syrian government. This is why you've not seen the Republicans and Democrats and neocons who wanted this regime change in Syria. That's why they allow this to all these different things that the Saudis do to go on. Because they have been fighters for the CIA and for its regime change wars. Even offering death row inmates a pardon and a monthly stipend for their families if they'll go become ISIS. In 2009, says Rand Paul, U.S. officials said Saudi Arabia was the, quote, most significant source of funding to Sunni terrorist groups worldwide, unquote. In 2014, those same officials wrote that Qatar and Saudi Arabia were, quote, providing clandestine financial and logistical support for ISIS and other radical Sunni groups. And again, the one thing that Prince Bandar was very adamant about was how much he hated Iran. And that's part of what's going on in Yemen. The Houthis are allied with Iran. They are Shia Muslims. And, of course, the Saudis are Wahhabists. When he was asked about that, they said, what about Wahhabism? And he goes, I do not know what you mean. You keep using this word. And they accepted the prince's bribe and all of that and didn't press him on any further questions as he was quoting that movie. But, you know, the Wahhabists, the Sunni terrorists going after the Sunni terrorists, the Iranian terrorists. It's hard to pick a side in this, but we seem to pick both sides in these wars, don't we? Rand Paul went on to say, I've also introduced legislation to halt U.S. arms sales to Saudi Arabia. I have been deeply disappointed with those of my colleagues in Congress who don't seem to care that the Yemenis are being massacred by U.S.-backed and armed Saudis. And that may be changing, because even some of the neocons like Lindsey Graham are speaking out. Let's play that clip from Lindsey Graham. It's interesting when you get Lindsey Graham and Rand Paul agreeing about a war.
Jamal Khashoggi dead, and did the Saudis kill him?
Well, with every passing day, it looks increasingly likely that he's dead. And the most logical explanation is that he went into the consulate, he never came out, and the Saudis had something to do with it. We'll know more in the coming days, but I've never been more concerned about his well-being than I am right now, and all the indicators point to Saudi Arabia, and if it turns out to be Saudi Arabia, as I've said before, there'll be all hell to pay.
What other signs are you looking for, if all signs are pointing there now?
Well, they need to account, Saudi Arabia does, for what happened in the consulate. He gave his phone to his fiancée about 1:15 in the afternoon, and she waited around to midnight and never came. I want to know who these 15 people from Saudi Arabia were that landed at the airport, went to the consulate. So you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to be concerned here. And if this is done at the hands of the Saudi government, if the crown prince was involved in this in any way, it will virtually destroy his ability to lead this country on the international stage.
I want to ask you, because you have warned that there would be hell to pay, was your words, for the Saudis if it was them.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That means all-out sanctions against those who engage in this behavior, isolating the regime, treating it with the contempt they showed to us. I've been a very big supporter of Saudi Arabia. We have strategic interest aligned against Iran.
Okay, let's hold it right there.
They've helped us in the war on terror.
They've been a good ally in
many ways.
As Pat Buchanan says, with friends like these, who needs enemies with head choppers like these? And he points out that the Saudi prince has become toxic. I think it has a lot to do. They didn't have a problem with him sponsoring terrorism. They didn't have a problem with him doing wars. I think the problem is this internecine fighting that's going on in Saudi Arabia. Because there's a lot of people in Saudi Arabia that have been tied together with the CIA. I think he stepped on some toes with that. Or otherwise, it would just look the other way. This is just one more person that they have chopped to pieces. I mean, who really cares in Washington about that sort of thing? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. As we were going through the Kavanaugh hearing, and a lot of people saying, yes, she has a right to be heard, but there should be a presumption of innocence. There should be due process. And as I was hearing that, I said, yeah, absolutely there should be. And you know, there should be a presumption of innocence and due process for us as well. It should be there before we allow the government to take our property, our cars, our homes, our cash under the war on drugs. They call that civil asset forfeiture. In virtually all these cases, well, in all the cases that nobody is convicted of a crime, that's why they call it civil. They don't call it criminal. There is no presumption of innocence. There is no due process. They take your stuff. You have to sue them to get it back. They don't even charge you with a crime. They just steal your stuff. And I also said it also holds true. It's even worse when they steal our children without due process. And then you have to sue them to get your children back. And in the meantime, some really horrific things have happened to children that have been kidnapped by CPS. We're talking to Dwight Mitchell. He's joining us in this segment. This happened to him as a father. He got upset about this, and as he was doing this fight, he found out that it was more than just some rogue bureaucrats that he was involved in. He realized that it was very widespread where he lived in Minnesota. And then he realized that it was a national problem as well, very large problem. He then began a foundation, and you can find information about that foundation. It's called Stop CPS Legally Kidnapping Children. It goes by the initials SCPS. LKC, Legally Kidnapping Children. So you can find that on Twitter at SCPSLKC, and also their website is scpslkc.org. Joining us now is Dwight Mitchell. Thank you for joining us again, sir.
Thank you for having me, David.
We got some pictures that you sent to us of the case that got quite a bit of media coverage, Amanda Weber's case. It was back, when was it? I think it was in, back in June, I think, when I first saw the stories about how her child was kidnapped, and eventually she was vindicated in late September. I reported on this a couple of weeks ago where the judge shut this down. But tell people, since you know about this particular case, right? It happened in your area. You've got some pictures of Amanda being reunited with her 10-month-old son. Tell the audience what happened to her. It's an absolutely outrageous story.
It's interesting. You know, when I started our 501c3 Family Preservation Foundation and then our program, which is Stop CPS from Living Kidnapping Children, people didn't believe what I was saying. I found it interesting that everyone said, well, if you're involved with CPS, you must have done something wrong. And I said, that's not the case. And so we need to show them exactly, you know, what's happening. So Amanda happened to call me the day after her son was taken. She presented the evidence. They took her son from medical neglect. She provided with two hospital reports that said her son was 100% fine. I said, okay, I'm going to take this case and I'm going to show the American public and the Minnesota officials exactly what is going on. The most disparaging part about this whole thing, David, is that the same medical reports that we presented on her very first day at court on June 1st, we filed a opposition to the petition to remove him from her home, Jalen from the home for medical neglect. We provided the medical reports that they used at trial. We didn't present any new evidence. The judge ruled
it just took them 4 months to go through this process. And in the meantime, the child had been kidnapped and was away from her, from his mother. He's only 10 months old and staying with strangers. And in many cases, the people that CPS has been using are not people that you would ever want to have anywhere close to your children. But don't do the due process first. They kidnap the kids. In this particular case, it was a medical kidnapping. She had gone to the hospital, a children's hospital, because her child had a cough. Tell us a little bit about how that came out, because it's absolutely amazing what the nurse and what this doctor did to steal her child from her working with CPS.
Well, she was in the hospital, and she took her son in for a cough, and they said her son was fine. They said, let's keep him overnight for observation just to make sure nothing is wrong. She said, that's fine. They gave him a discharge a physical in the morning, and she was waiting for the second doctor to discharge her son. And so after an hour and a half, she went and said, listen, I want to go. I have my 3-year-old, my 10-month-old. They're tired. They want to go home and go to sleep. How much longer is it going to take? They said, well, the doctor's going to come up eventually. He'll be here soon. He's making rounds. So at trial, the doctor said they didn't prioritize her for discharge because, you know, it was an emergency situation. So they basically were just going to let her, you know, sit around and wait for them to get there. She decides to leave the hospital. The doctor calls her nurse practitioner, Cassandra Voida, and this nurse practitioner supplies all this disinformation to the social worker and calls CPS saying the child is in has a real risk of dying. So once this was done, CPS got involved. The heinous part about this is that CPS took the child before they even performed the medical examination, told the mother, you're not getting the child back. We're removing it for you immediately. No physical, nothing whatsoever. They had the foster parent waiting in the doctor's office when the mother arrived. Then they took the child to the hospital without the mother, got a full physical, had the child stay in overnight again. It's a second hospital report, found out the child was fine and still kept the child. Now, there was no exigent circumstances. They knew the child was fine and they didn't return it to the mother the next day. They kept the child for 120 days. And that's exactly what we're talking about. And the judge allowed this to happen. And so
I'm looking at this story. That he was there, he was kept for 4 months, as you point out. You know, she had gone to the doctor, she had waited, and then, she had kids that were with her, and she wanted to get them home as well. It was 4 months and 6 court dates. And as you said at the very beginning, there was no additional evidence that was presented except what you had at the very beginning. They found no health problems whatsoever. They still kidnapped this 10-month-old, kept him for 4 months, and made her go to court six different times to try to prove this. The judge said that the doctor and the social worker had acted in bad faith and with malice, obviously.
Well, what was fascinating in my opinion is that we supplied the judge with the information. And so there's a prima facie case that the state has to show. And that's the part that we're saying is wrong in Minnesota. They do not have to corroborate the evidence or present it to the court like they do in other states, like in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, you can't remove a child until you actually supply the court with some information that corroborates that the child is in harm or in need of services. Minnesota doesn't have that requirement. Minnesota says someone can make allegations, and purely on these allegations, we can remove your child, and we don't have to present any evidence for the removal until 120 days. Now, Minnesota gives you the opportunity to destroy the prima facie, and we kept presenting this evidence to the judge, and the judge kept denying the request. So we put in two oppositions. We filed a motion to dismiss. We filed another motion that this was unconstitutional. So we tried four different times to get this dismissed in the 120 days, and Judge Weller kept saying no, 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 no. And then at trial, he says, well, there's no medical net. I'm going to give the child back. And we're sitting here going, like, you knew this in the very beginning. You had the same information now that you had 120 days ago. You kept trying to give CPS the opportunity to try and prove the allegations.
Yeah.
And then when they couldn't.
And let me ask you this, Dwight. Do you think that he suddenly changed because this got national attention?
No, not whatsoever. He actually, we were astonished. He actually admonished Amanda for not cooperating. Amanda was like, I don't have to cooperate. I don't need your service. You could have got more services if you were cooperating.
Hey.
It's like, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't need to.
All right, we've got to take a break, but when we come back, let's broaden this out, because we talk about these individual cases, and we could talk about Dwight's case, but I want to show you a picture of all the children that he's rescued so far, just in that area. There it is right there. And I want to talk about how this is much bigger than just one judge, one hospital, one case, and why our children ought to get due process, not just Brett Kavanaugh.
You may.
Welcome back. We're talking to Dwight Mitchell. He has had the government come after him, take his child without due process. He saw other people were having the same thing done. We just talked about the case of Amanda Weber, who had her 10-month-old stolen, medically kidnapped using CPS. Took 4 months to get her back, 6 court appearances. Nothing changed from the beginning to the end, but they couldn't get due process. And so when we look at these situations, we look at Me Too and all the controversy about Brett Kavanaugh, maybe we need a hashtag that says parents too. Hashtag parents too. Because parents are not getting due process either. And it's very important that we don't allow these types of things to happen in our country, especially to our children. And this is a very large problem. We've got a picture here that Dwight sent us of a rally that happened on Tuesday. And of course, he's fighting back. Dwight fought back, got his child back, and now he's working to help other people get their children back. If you want to find out more about how you can help, he set up a foundation called the Family Preservation Foundation. And you can find him on Twitter at S for Stop, Stop CPS Legally Kidnapping Kids. So it's SCPSLKC, Legally Kidnapping Kids. And you can find the same thing on the website, SCPSLKC.org. And as I'm looking at that picture of the rally, Dwight, somebody is holding up a sign there that says only 17% of accusations are ever substantiated. 83% of kids in the foster system are wrongly taken from parents by CPS. And of course, those 83% of the kids that are taken, if they do get the kids back, it's after long detention. In some cases, some horrific things happen. I've got a case here in front of me that happened in Arizona. A child was removed from a loving family, placed into foster care, where she was repeatedly raped, and then 80% of her body was burned. That's in Arizona. Talk about the nature of this, how large it is, and what is the motivation behind these bureaucrats behind these hospitals who are kidnapping individuals.
It's funny you should mention that, because just a few weeks ago, Michael Beckett, who is the assistant director of North Carolina DHS, actually said that they have known for years that separating children from family causes trauma to the children and the families, and that now they are putting in a plan based on the new Family First Initiative to work to keep the children in the home. And Molly McGrath, the director of the Baltimore DHS, on her TEDx talk, which is phenomenal. I recommend everyone to go look at that if they really want to truly understand what's going on. It's Molly McGrath. But she says that the only time that CPS gets paid is when they're taking your children. That's the way the system is set up. And so we have these two directors who are saying that this is the way the system works. It's wrong and it needs to be changed. So, and Molly McGrath actually said there's 50 agencies in the U.S. You see, there's not one that's doing it correctly. So I started this in Minnesota, you know, to try and provide like legal aid. So we started the group, which has grown from 250 people to 5,000 people in less than 120 days. You can't tell me that 5,000 people in Minnesota are going to mysteriously just come out of the woodworks and something is not wrong with the system. Yeah. So what we're trying to do is to hire more lawyers. We started a fundraiser to hire staff lawyers, because we said we need lawyers working on this full time. They took 15,004 children last year. Now, the national average is 84% are taken from just social worker discretion. Only 12% are actually alleged to have physical abuse, and 4% are actually alleged to have sexual abuse. So the other 84% is just purely social worker discretion. In Minnesota, they don't have to prove anything till trial, and they drag it out and drag it out and do whatever they can to keep those children. So we're trying to combat that by hiring staff lawyers. And, you know, our goal is to get 7 in Minneapolis, in the Minneapolis office, and then to expand and start going to different counties. But we want lawyers working to help parents get their children back full time. It has been shown that with a good lawyer, the average amount of time that's spent, you know, in CPS custody or foster care is dramatically shortened. The New York City did a study, and they said that parents who had lawyers, which most of them do not, the time spent out in out-of-home placement is 60 to 90 days versus the ones that don't have lawyers, which is up to a year. So that's a study that's done by New York, who has one of the largest removal rates, and that they're trying to curb also. So this is not just a Minnesota trend. It's a national trend. We are trying to fight back. You know, we filed a lawsuit. That's the rally that you're actually looking at from this past Tuesday. What was interesting is that when we were having oral arguments, the state and county government actually put forth the argument that we don't have standing to challenge their statutes on their constitutional basis. I'm like, what are you talking about? We are the people. That constitution applies to us. How dare you come in and say that we're nothing, we're nobody, and we don't have the ability or authority to challenge you and on what we feel are unconstitutional laws and standards. But that's what they said. We're going to get those transcripts. We're going to forward them to you. So you're going to sit here and say, wow, they actually said this. You know, you can't challenge us. We're the government. We can do whatever we want.
Now, of course, what they'll do is they'll always take the worst case scenarios and they say, we want to err on the side of caution. We want to take the kids away before anything happens to them in an abusive home. But repeat again what you said in terms of the percentage where there was allegations, even allegations of violence or sexual abuse in the homes. It was only, 16% or 14% or something like that?
16% are physical and 4% are sexual. And the other 84% are social worker discretion, and they put it under the neglect category. Now, this is not these are not my findings. I challenge everybody go out to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services website. All the information is there. It's called the AFSCARS report. It's ACFARS. It's the report they give to Congress annually. So they have the reports going back for 10 years, so they know what's going on. And it's just, I said, show me the percentage of cases where the parent is actually found guilty. Well, I'm having a very difficult time getting those numbers. All
you probably have to sue them for that. They're not going to give that up voluntarily. You have to sue them.
Well, I wrote a letter for the Freedom of Information Act, and she said, well, we don't carry that information. I said, how can you not carry that information to DHS? She said, well, you need to go to judiciary. You know, we don't determine, you know, what happens after they go into the system. We're just reporting on how many people we took in and what category we placed them in. Mm-hmm. And so I sat and I said, well, okay, well, this is heinous because in Minnesota, the disparity in the system is atrocious. Meaning, Native Americans, they're 17.1 times more likely to be removed from the home. Two or more races where 59% are black are 4.8 times more likely to be removed from the home. African Americans are 3.5 more times more likely. And I sit here and I look at the trend. They've taken over 3,000 African American out of the home, over 3,000 Native American out of the home, another 1,600 Hispanics out of the home in Minnesota. And I'm sitting here going like, I'm looking at, you know, the percentage per capita, and it just doesn't make sense. And what's the trend with all of these families? They're low income, including the Caucasian.
And they don't have an ability to push back. Again, this case in Arizona, this is a Caucasian child, and it turned out that they found in Arizona that she was raped, the home that she was put in, she was raped. It was part of a pornographic pedophile ring. This is being reported by medicalkidnap.com. And the cases in Arizona have gone through the roof in terms of the number of people that they've been kidnapping the kids. It's gone up 80% between 2003 and 2012 in Arizona. And so there's some malicious stuff that goes on the other side. You know, they'll always take the worst case scenario and say, well, you know, here's an allegation and we didn't do anything about it. And then the parents beat or killed this child. They'll put that out there, but then they won't talk about the fact that the same thing can happen on the other side. So there has to be due process, and there has to be some legal due process. There has to be, there should be a situation where they actually have a hearing and you've got a fair and partial hearing immediately. I mean, that kind of stuff can be done very quickly to protect the child from having either of these things happen, but from leaving them in a home that they need to be removed from, or to keep them from being put into a system that can be very abusive on its own, even more abusive than parents.
Well, we're not saying that, you know, we're against CPS. We think there needs to be a CPS, and we agree that, you know, CPS is required. We're just saying, present the evidence that you have. If you remove a child, mm-hmm. there should be some evidence. Even if say, okay, we need 7 days to collect it. Well, 7 days is fine, you know, a week or whatever. But you need to come forward. You can't say it's going to take us 120 days and we're going to traumatize.
Allocate the resources just to protect the children so they can do a quick, speedy trial. Thank you so much for joining us, Dwight Mitchell, SCPS, LKC.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We were just talking to Dwight Mitchell, and I had to end abruptly because we're getting to a commercial break. I just want to give you his organization again. It is Stop CPS from Legally Kidnapping Children. And again, you can find them by the initials S as in Stop, CPS, and LKC, Legally Kidnapping Children. So you can find him on Twitter at SCPS, LKC, and the same thing with their website, the same initials, SCPS, LKC.org. Very important that people come together, understand how this is working, fight for things. Let me read you what is on their sign there. That's just one last thing before we move on to other news. They say, everyone demands, and they've got a list of 7 demands here. Family preservation first. 2, no trauma to children. 3, no random allegations. There must be evidence of harm. 4, a safety plan before removal of the children. 5, no secrecy, an open court system. See, these are the same things that are plaguing us throughout our society and every aspect of our life, the secrecy that our government operates under. And the fact that we don't have an open court system, we don't have a presumption of innocence. We don't have due process. 6, independent doctor evaluations for these children if they're accusing them of medical neglect or something. Number seven, no immunity for the government workers if they're caught lying, fabricating, or withholding evidence. See, this is why this continues to go on. When you have government workers who engage in lying, fabrication of evidence, or in the case we see with law enforcement, if they engage in activity that is abusive and excessive, nothing happens to them. They get immunity. The system embraces that kind of corruption, and that's what makes it get worse. You have to have the punishment in order to stop other people from thinking that they can do whatever they wish and start acting like Judge Dredds. Let's talk quickly about what is happening with censorship. You know, there's an article coming out of Hong Kong, or actually an action being taken by Hong Kong lawmakers. And of course, Hong Kong operated freely. They had a 99-year lease that the British government, when they were colonial power, had enforced on China. They got them to sign over Hong Kong on a 99-year lease. They turned it back, I guess it was, what was it, in the late 90s or so? And they're now a separate autonomous region, technically. The Chinese mainland communists said, well, we won't come in and take it over completely. We'll let them have some self-governance. And yet they're gradually strangling that. They are coming after the free press. They're trying to propagandize their kids in school. Does this sound familiar? Does this sound like Washington D.C.? Is Beijing kind of like Washington, D.C.? Yes. It is a pattern of behavior that we see from tyrants globally. And so you've got, as they're cracking down on the free press, you've got over a dozen lawmakers in Hong Kong taking to the street, staging a protest, chanting, "Protect press freedom," holding up signs that say, "Free press, no persecution," until security guards escorted them from the chamber. Now, these are lawmakers in Hong Kong doing this. And I have to ask you, why aren't we seeing any Republicans chanting, "Protect press freedom"? I don't see any Republicans in Congress. I don't see any Republicans in state houses doing this. I don't see any Democrats doing it. As a matter of fact, I see Democrats bringing in the social media censors and demanding that they censor InfoWars, demanding just the opposite. And you ask yourself, are we headed for something that is even worse than China? There they are standing there. Are we headed for something that's even worse than China? Because we don't even have any legislators here that will stand up, that even care about freedom of the press or your free speech, because that's what's being taken on social media. It's your free speech. That's different from freedom of the press. They are both important. And we don't, and we got both parties that don't care about that. More on that when we come back. Stay with us.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Milton Friedman did a interesting documentary series of videos. It was called Free to Choose. He did it back in the 1980s. And as he was talking about freedom worldwide, he kept going back to Hong Kong. Because in Hong Kong, you had a very light control of the people. The British government didn't care anymore about Hong Kong. They were past their colonial period. They still had their 99-year lease. The Chinese communists had not really flexed their muscle yet. It had only been about 10, maybe 15 years, maybe 10, since Henry Kissinger had turned over the reins of power to them structurally, but they really hadn't become an economic powerhouse, a political powerhouse, trying to expand their political power and crush Hong Kong. It was later, as the 99-year lease was ending, that they made the move and said, you're going to turn them back to us. And now, as China gets stronger, they are exercising more and more authoritarian control over Hong Kong. And so what's happened recently was we had the Hong Kong government, which is becoming more and more complicit to the will of mainland China, they refused to renew the visa of an editor of the Financial Times. And he's also the vice president of the Foreign Correspondents Club. His name is Victor Mallet. He was effectively expelled from Hong Kong last week because the government would not renew his visa. They were retaliating against him for inviting the leader of a banned party, the Hong Kong National Party. Now, at the time that he invited them to speak at his Foreign Correspondents Club, the party had not been banned by the government. They were subsequently banned by the government. And then they said, and you had this guy, before we banned the party, you had this guy from the Independence Party speak at your Foreign Correspondents Club. So we're going to ban you. Essentially making the case for why you should be voting for the Hong Kong National Party and getting their independence. But it is, they came back and they said, Hong Kong will not tolerate any acts that advocate Hong Kong's independence and threaten the country's sovereignty. Isn't that kind of an oxymoron? Isn't their independence their sovereignty? Nevertheless, we had Hong Kong lawmakers, as I reported in the last segment, stage a protest. They chanted, protect press freedom, free the press, no persecution. And then they had security guards escort the lawmakers out. And as I said, are we better here in America? Because we don't have anybody in the Republican Party as the conservative, largely it's the censorship at this point in time. At this point in time, liberals, it is being directed at conservatives. So don't celebrate because your time in the barrel is coming. That's what authoritarian governments do. And so Republicans are silent about this. They won't stand up to this like the people in Hong Kong, as the Chinese communist government was forcing a curriculum full of lies and government worship of the Chinese communists onto their children. They took to the streets to protest that. You see Americans protesting these kinds of propaganda and lies and cultural manipulation of our children? No, we're silent. Those of us on the street are silent. Americans are not protesting as we're having our freedoms taken away, because our freedoms have been taken away way before the people in Hong Kong. It's happening to them much more quickly. And that's why they're standing up. They were pretty free back in the 1980s when Milton Friedman talked about that. We were already, had lost many of the freedoms that they enjoyed. And in a short period of time, they've lost their freedoms. That's why they're protesting. We don't have any Republicans at any level protesting any of this stuff. They're just pushing behind closed doors, as Marco Rubio did, pushing the social media to censor for their purposes instead of the Chinese government's purposes. And then you have the Democrats openly saying, when are you going to censor InfoWars? Until they did. Over and over again. Publicly saying that. Did you hear any Republicans standing up and talking about that? No. We talked about it here. And we said, they're going to shut us down. And they did. And then when they shut us down, we said, you know what? We're going to just be the first ones, because this is being allowed. They're going to come after other people. Well, they have. They have now. Just in the last day, we had Facebook purge over 800 accounts with millions of followers. Facebook has removed 559 pages, 251 accounts that they claim have been spreading misinformation and spam. Several of the pages had millions of followers and were pro-Trump conservatives who had spent years cultivating their followings. But not all of them were even pro-Trump or necessarily even conservative. They were libertarian. They didn't like censorship. They didn't like the surveillance state. They didn't like the police state, like Free Thought Project, for example. They tweeted out, Facebook has unpublished our page. After 5 years of building fans, Facebook has officially unpublished our page with 3.1 million fans so that we can't post on it anymore. This is truly an outrage and we are devastated. We will do everything we can to recover our page and fight back. That's Free Thought Project. Free Thought Project with 3.1 million followers. Now, listen to the way the Washington Post reports that. The Washington Post comes out and says, the accounts and pages with names such as Reasonable People Unite and Reverb Press were probably domestic actors using clickbait headlines and other spammy tactics. Come on, give me a break. This is the Washington Post. This is Jeff Bezos' political blog. And then they go on to say some had hundreds of thousands of followers. I just read you one of them. One of them, Free Thought Project, 3.1 million followers, Washington Post. What a bunch of lying propagandists working with the government, working with the internet censors, the Washington Post. This is the scope of the problem, folks. You're not going to find any politicians doing this. We're going to have to do the heavy lifting ourselves. And there's a way that we can get this back. But anyway, the Washington Post goes on to lie about this. Some of them had hundreds of thousands of followers and expressed a range of political views. Most of them were conservative. But you know what? They did get some liberals. They did get some liberals. So all you people who are dancing in the aisles and clapping about InfoWars being shut down, they got some liberals this time, and there's going to be more liberals that are taken out. See, they're not really necessarily, it's not about Democrats versus Republicans. You know, some of these news reports are saying, well, this is happening just before the midterms. And yeah, that is significant because the bulk of them are Republican. The bulk of them are pro-Trump. But the reality is that they're going to come after anybody that doesn't push the central establishment narrative that is embraced by both parties. So you want to talk about vaccines? You're going to be censored heavily. Because both the Republicans and the Democrats, both Fox News and CNN, and of course all of the internet censors, they all love vaccines. It's accepted. It's settled science. So shut up about it or we'll take you down. Anybody, left or right, wants to push back against this accepted narrative of the establishment, they will shut you down. And it's already begun. And so Washington Post says, well, these are probably domestic actors using clickbait headlines and spammy tactics. So what? So what if they had clickbait headlines? A Washington Post puts out clickbait headlines all the time. All the time. All the time. Some had hundreds of thousands of followers. Some of them had millions of followers, but Washington Post will lie about that. That express a range of political viewpoints, including a page that billed itself as the first publication to endorse President Trump. They did not appear to have ties to Russia, company officials said. Oh, well, that's a first. First time they're going to not lie about that. And so a conservative firing line says, we reached out to Facebook. We asked them for an explanation. We asked them why the action was taken without first reaching out to the owners of the affected pages, but they haven't given us a response. They said in their official statement that they were banning inauthentic behavior. Inauthentic behavior. Inauthentic behavior. They said, interestingly enough, the Daily Caller reported one Facebook engineer resigned on Wednesday, saying the company culture is one that operates on groupthink, that uses appeasement as a PR strategy and attacks conservative views. I care too deeply about our role in supporting free expression and intellectual diversity to continue working for Facebook. Welcome back. I'll talk a little bit more about what happened this week. Because this is a week that began, if you remember. On the 8th, we had the article at InfoWars.com. New Facebook portal camera will follow you around the room. It'll follow you around the room. So I said at the time, that's worse than 1984. In 1984, at least Winston could get to a corner of the room where Big Brother couldn't see him. But not with Facebook's camera. It'll follow you around the room. Focus in on you. Keep you in the frame, no matter where you go. Keep everybody in view. And that's the way the week began. But here we are, and yesterday we had Facebook purge over 800 accounts, political pages, both left and right, but mostly conservative. Yesterday there was a poll that came out from Media Research Center, a conservative group. They polled conservatives. They found that 49% of them don't trust Twitter. And I looked at that and thought, why only 49%? What's that with the rest of the people? 16.7% said they do trust Twitter. 49% said they don't. And 34% weren't sure. So I really don't understand what's going on. Why they haven't gotten the memo yet. They need to be listening to this program. I give you reasons every day not to trust social media. So I say all the time, Twitter is not social media, and Facebook is not social media, and Google is not a search engine. They are instruments of psychological control, designed that way, built that way. DARPA, the CIA, all have a hand in it. The establishment, Republican and Democrat parties, all have a hand in it. So we began with the new Facebook camera that wants your face, keeping all your biometrics, watching everywhere that you go, and then we end the week with this information from Facebook, purging people. And the fact that nearly 50% of conservatives don't trust Facebook anymore. And again, I happen to notice that my followers went down. And so I looked at the metrics yesterday and I saw, oh yeah, they went down 500. They deleted 500 of my followers in the last 2 days for some reason. And then I noticed that they had deleted 22 tweets of mine yesterday. 22 tweets. And then I looked up within the last month or so, they've been deleting two tweets here, three tweets there. And it's like, what's going on? I never deleted those tweets. I don't delete the tweets. They're deleting my tweets. I've had situations where I've asked them, I said, go back and get this thing that I tweeted out. They couldn't find it. The crew couldn't find it here. They actually had to log in as me. They still couldn't see it. They had to go into my past tweets to find it. Logged in as me. They couldn't even find it when they went in, not logged in as me. And even as me, they had a hard time finding it on there. It's interesting. That particular tweet was something that I said about Jake Tapper and CNN. Interesting how Twitter would hide that. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? That is a rhetorical question. Anyway, and all this happened after last week we had Facebook security allowing hackers to control the accounts of 50 million users. And yet this week they come out and say, well, we've seen some inauthentic behavior on people. Well, maybe it was the hacking of the accounts that you allowed to have happen last week. Because they've taken down a lot of different groups. Again, I said Free Thought Project, 3.1 million followers. They said they spent 5 years building this. See, that's the other part of this. It's torturous interference. You spend a lot of time putting this stuff together. We had, when they shut down Memory Hold Us on YouTube, we'd been embedding YouTube videos into our articles for a long time. So now you find the stubs there, but you can't see the articles. And it'd take a very long time for us to repopulate that because we've been doing that for so long. So they flush a lot of stuff down the memory hole, even on our website. It'll take us a lot of time and effort to go back and put that in. Another person, Dan Dix, Press for Truth, that I've been memory holed from Facebook, 350,000 followers. Poof, just gone. And remember, it was the Washington Post said, oh yeah, these people were doing spammy things and they deserved it. And a couple of them had thousands of followers. It's like millions of followers. And Dan Dix, 350,000 followers on Facebook, just gone. He said, there's a dangerous precedent being set here where big tech companies have appointed themselves as the gatekeepers of political thought and opinion. And that's absolutely true. We said the dangerous precedent really was set when they were able to do it very high profile and get away with it with Alex Jones and with InfoWars. And I said at the time when that happened, that was 2 months ago. And now we see them rolling it out to 800 people. They did it to InfoWars, got away with it. Now they're doing it to 800 different pages yesterday. Political pages. Because they can get away with doing it with a high profile person. They can get away with doing it to everybody. Everybody. They will control speech. Here's anti-media. And again, they're on the left. Anti-media is on the left. Our Facebook page with over 2.1 million followers has been published along with over 800 other pages and accounts. The purge of alternative media is upon us, says anti-media. Facebook claims that quote unquote domestic actors, unquote, have been creating quote fake pages and accounts to attract people with shocking political views, reports Bloomberg. See, Bloomberg and the Washington Post are right there. They've got Facebook's back. They're covering up for them and explaining this away. They're not going to criticize them for any of this stuff. The people behind the activity also post the same clickbait posts in dozens of Facebook groups, they said. They said they often use their fake accounts to generate fake likes and fake shares. This artificially inflates engagement for their inauthentic pages and posts that they share, misleading people about their popularity and improving their ranking and newsfeed. Anti-media on the left, Free Thought Project, Dandex, InfoWars, it's not fake. It's not fake. Washington Post says, yeah, they deserve it because they had clickbait headlines. You don't think that the Washington Post runs clickbait headlines all the time? They absolutely do. Bloomberg said, Nation in Distress, a conservative meme page, was followed by more than 3 million people. Washington Post says, well, there are, you know, a few, maybe hundreds of thousands of followers. I've just read you three of these. You had 3 million for Nation in Distress, 3.1 million for Free Thought Project, 2.1 million for Anti-Media, 350,000 for Dan Dix, but Washington Post says hundreds of thousands, hundreds of thousands. We had billions of views on YouTube, and they flushed it all down the memory hole. We've got a psychologist, Dr. Robert Epstein, in an interview with Breitbart, and he says what I've been saying. Google is the most powerful mind control engine ever created. He said, in a piece I published in U.S. News and World Report, I identified Google as the biggest censor that has ever existed in human history and identified 9 types of censorship in which the company engages. And then he referred to the Google document that was released to Breitbart that they published called The Good Censor. That's what they see themselves as, because they're not evil. They're the good censor. He said, what my research has shown beyond any doubt is that the search engine is the most powerful mind control machine that has ever been invented in the history of humankind. I have said many times that the internet was proposed by a psychiatrist, J.C.R. Licklider, and it got really dangerous when it became practical. And when it became practical, that's when the CIA and DARPA joined the venture capitalists to fund Google.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to be joining Roger Stone in just a moment, an InfoWars contributor and also a victim of frivolous Democrat lawsuits. We're going to tell you the latest tricks that they are up to against Roger Stone, trying to get to President Trump through Roger and trying to get to Roger through some of his former assistants. It's absolutely amazing that Rod Rosenstein can refuse to give any information to the House Judiciary Committee. Absolutely refuse. Just stonewall them completely. And yet these types of things continue to go on, these other fishing expeditions, as they're threatening to come after Andrew Miller. We're going to talk to Roger Stone about that. I think that the House is going to have to do something. President Trump is going to have to do something. I don't think Jeff Sessions is going to do anything about Rosenstein. And we need to set up some kind of a campaign, spare the rod, spoil the Department of Justice, something like that to get his attention. Before we go to Roger, real quickly, I want to tell you about the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have an unprecedented special. We've never done anything like this before. All of the InfoWars Life products, 50% off and free shipping. The largest sale we've ever had, the broadest sale we've ever had, the deepest discounts we've ever had, and applied across all InfoWars Life products. Things like BrainForce Plus, my favorite supplement, Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste with nano silver. We also have Super Male Vitality, Ultimate Bone Broth, Bod Ease, Alpha Power, Real Red Pill, Silver Bullet, Knockout, everything, 50% off plus free shipping. Take a look at the specials that we have. That's everything. That's InfoWars Life. 50% off with free shipping at InfoWarsStore.com. We really need your support, and we really do appreciate it. All right, let's go to Roger Stone now. Of course, you can find Roger at StoneColdTruth.com. Thank you, Roger, for joining us. Tell us a little bit about what's going on here with these lawsuits, because I know you've been fighting a lot of these different lawsuits. In July, there was a lawsuit that was dismissed that involved you and President Trump and the Trump campaign, dismissed for lack of personal jurisdiction back in July, but they are still coming at you guys with another lawsuit, aren't they?
Well, it's very interesting, David. The Atlantic is really the epitome of fake news. A reporter named Natasha Bertrand is no reporter at all. She's a full-throated partisan. And back in, I guess it was July, an Obama-backed front group called the Project for Democracy brought a lawsuit against me and the Trump campaign claiming, stop me if you've heard this, the Russians hacked the DNC.
Stop, I've heard it. I don't want to hear it again. When I saw this thing from the Atlantic, the headline, I had to stare at it several times because it was so convoluted. The Trump campaign says exploiting hacked emails is free speech. It's like nobody ever said that hacking emails is free speech. That's crazy. Now,
so the allegation was that the Russians hacked the DNC, unproven at best, gave the allegedly hacked material to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks gave it to Assange. Assange gave it to me, and I gave it to Trump. A fairy tale, a canard, a lie. When in trial they were pressed for evidence of this conspiracy, they produced a clipping from the Huffington Post because there is no evidence for something that never happened. Thanks to the terrific work of my attorneys, Grant Smith and Rob Bushell, that lawsuit was dismissed. Now they've refiled the lawsuit, not in Washington, but in Richmond. But I had to bludgeon the Atlantic into admitting that I am not included in the new lawsuit. I am not among the defendants. The Trump campaign makes the argument that once something has appeared in the public domain, repeating it is not illegal. Duh.
Yeah, that goes all the way back to the Pentagon Papers. We established that at that point in time.
Oh, no, no, yeah. We have to celebrate the Washington Post. That's great, right? Heroes. They publish classified information. We should laud them. They should get a Pulitzer Prize. Oh, wait a minute. Assange published classified information that embarrassed the Clintons? Why, he's a criminal. He needs to be locked up immediately. Really, the Atlantic magazine is garbage. It is not fit for wiping your derriere after you defecate. That's how bad this publication is. Now, at the same
time, you're talking about going back to the Pentagon Papers. We had Steven Spielberg do the Post, you know, with all of Hollywood's elite. You had Meryl Streep, you had Tom Hanks, you had Steven Spielberg, all putting together this thing, celebrating exactly what they say is now a big deal, that once information is out in the public domain, that you've got to jail people if they use that information that's in the public domain. And yet they celebrated that. They made that movie in the midst of everything that was happening with the allegations about the Russian collusion, their false story about Russian collusion. And then they put that out, which celebrates exactly what they now want to lock people up for. It's absolutely amazing. The hypocrisy. Yeah,
this is liberal hypocrisy. It's freedom of the press if it's the Pentagon Papers. It's a crime if it's Julian Assange. It's not rape if it's Bill Clinton. But if it's anyone else, it's rape. These people have no bounds. It's funny because once in a tweet, I referred to Roland Martin as a Negro. You know what? I thought about it, and it was thoughtless. It was mean-spirited. I apologize for it. It was really stupid. But now on CNN, you can refer to Kanye West as a Negro, and nobody says anything whatsoever.
Yep.
The liberal double standard. In the meantime, as you know, Robert Mueller has poked into every aspect, every corner of my personal life, going through my life with a microscope. My personal life, my private life, my family life, my political life, my business life, my relationship with Alex Jones. At least 8 people have been questioned before the grand jury about Alex Jones. Does Stone talk to Jones every day? Does Stone tell Jones what to say? Now, there's a joke. No one tells Alex Jones what to say. But it's an inquisition, and Robert Mueller is Torquemada. He has attempted to violate the Fourth Amendment rights of my longtime associate, Andrew Miller. Mr. Miller currently works as a house painter in St. Louis, Missouri, Prior to that, he worked as a perfectly legal pot farmer in Northern California. He hasn't worked for me in 2 years, yet Mr. Mueller wants to drag him in front of the grand jury. And he resists. He has challenged Mr. Mueller's constitutional authority. There's no special counsel law under which Mueller has been appointed. And the argument that Mueller's appointment is legal because he has the oversight of an elected official, Donald Trump, and an official appointed by an elected official, Rod Rosenstein, doesn't work because Trump and Rosenstein are both, at a minimum, subjects of the Mueller investigation. Ergo, there is a stunning conflict. This decision is headed for the U.S. Supreme Court sooner or later. Right now, it's in front of an appeals court in D.C., an ultra-liberal appeals court where it will probably lose. Look for a victory lap by the liberals when it loses, but it's meaningless. I'm hoping the Supremes take this and they finally knock Mr. Mueller out once and for all. Meanwhile, Rod Rosenstein is running from justice. He refuses to disclose to the Congress the information surrounding the phony FISA warrants that were used unconstitutionally to spy on the Trump campaign. He refuses to disclose his relationship with Mueller or Comey, both relevant in this matter. It's only a matter of time before Rod Rosenstein, the worst weasel in American history, is brought to justice.
It's absolutely amazing. We got more. We got to take a quick break. We're going to be back with Roger Stone. It's amazing that we got Jeff Sessions, who says, well, I've got to remove myself because of a conflict of interest. And yet you got Rosenstein, who is the subject of the investigation. Rosenstein, who refuses to give any information to the House Judiciary Committee, and he persists. It's absolutely amazing. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Roger Stone. Roger, is it just shows that you've got a Twitter account now. Are you back on Twitter, Stone Cold Roger?
No, actually, that is not me. That is a fan. I actually think Twitter traces the URLs. That is a devoted fan. I'm grateful to whoever that is, he or she, because what they do is they mirror my Facebook posts. And they put them up at Twitter. But I'm banned for life because, as you know, I hurt Jake Tapper's feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a double standard here. Keith Olbermann can advocate the violent assassination of Donald Trump, and he is banned. Alex Jones can broadcast the truth on numerous issues, and he is banned. But if you insult Anna Navarro for pointing out that she looks like Miss Piggy, well, they're going to take you down. That's just the way it is.
Stone cold truth right there. That was
it really is. I mean, look, social media, you have to wonder. They no longer care about profitability. They no longer care about their own future. Facebook, Twitter, they will collapse in on themselves in the end. As conservatives and free-thinking Americans head to different platforms.
It just had over 800 alternative media pages shut down yesterday on Facebook. And some of these, like Free Thought Project, 3 million. You had on the left, you had anti-media, over 3 million. They shut them down. And I was looking at my Twitter followers. I noticed a big drop on my Twitter followers, and then I looked and saw that they had deleted 22 of my tweets yesterday. No information about what that is. I just saw that with a third-party metric. So it's really crazy what they're doing. Yeah.
They're begging for government regulation. And if not, well, then frankly, it's only a matter of time before right-thinking patriots storm those offices and demand justice. I don't advocate violence, but they're asking for it, in all honesty.
Roger, I don't even think we need to have any legislation. I don't think we need to have any antitrust, actions taken against them because we've already got a Supreme Court decision going back to 1946. Talked about this many times. When Jack Dorsey testified, he said five times that Twitter was a public square or a digital public square. And going back to 1946, you had a Supreme Court decision where it was a company-owned town, and they threw out a woman who was a Jehovah's Witness who was handing out literature. She fought them all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said it doesn't matter if you own it privately. If it's the public square, even if you own it privately as a corporation, you can't shut down free speech. We just need to enforce that decision.
Now, I could not agree more. It's outrageous what we're seeing. And I've thought for a long time that the censorship of InfoWars, closing you down, David, and Alex Jones and Owen Schroyer and the War Room and Millie Weaver and so much that we do here, is the precursor to their attempt to take down Donald Trump. Here's how it works. You've just seen the dress rehearsal. You've seen their dry run. If the Democrats win the House a few short days from now, they will almost immediately vote articles of impeachment against Donald Trump. The substance of those articles is meaningless. We will now move to a show trial in the U.S. Senate in which the same women who baselessly accused the president of sexual assault during the 2016 campaign will be trotted out to recycle their false claims.
Yep.
No evidence, no corroboration, no eyewitnesses, no proof is required. They must be believed because they're women, period. End of story. And then the mainstream media will whip up a hysteria and they will attempt to get 2/3 of the Senate to remove the president. Let's be clear. Among the Republican senators, Donald Trump probably has 2 supporters, maybe 3. The Republican members of the United States Senate hate Donald Trump. They hate his reform agenda. They like the status quo. They like things just the way they are. They can't say that openly because back in their home states, the president's far more popular than Ben Sasse, for example, in Nebraska. Far more popular than Jeff Flake in Arizona. So they have to pretend they support the president when secretly they despise him. This is why it is essential that the Republicans control the House. The idea of Jerry Nadler, a man who, when the New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver covered up sexual harassment, where were you, Fat Jerry? You said nothing. You were silent. Or Mazie Hirono, when senior U.S. Senator Dan Inouye from Hawaii was accused of sexual assault by a hairdresser named Lenore Kwok. Why? Mazie, you didn't say a word, not a word. So the person who needs to shut up is you. These people are hypocrites. They're frauds. And when Cory Booker wasn't busy stealing $600,000 from a city water authority, voting himself to give the contract to his law firm, where he quickly put the money in his own pocket, and then claiming he wasn't present for the meeting, even though the minutes show that he was present and voted aye, you know, you gotta wonder. These people have no consistency. They have no rationale. They will say whatever it takes to smear our president.
Well, you know, if they really wanted to do something about sexual harassment, they would investigate and be transparent and open about all of the money that was spent on behalf of House members under Nancy Pelosi to cover up sexual assault and harassment charges. But they've kept that all secret. Because that information does not deserve to be heard. You know, you're talking about the show trial that will happen if the Democrats win. Before we had this Kavanaugh show trial, we had a lot of talk about Rod Rosenstein being fired or at least resigning. And, of course, the Axios reporter, Jonathan Swan, put that information out there, took a lot of heat. As people were pushing back on him for that, he said, hey, look, I've even got the memo that was written in the voice of Jeff Sessions accepting his resignation. And then, of course, he was validated this last week when he broke the news about Nikki Haley resigning. But what do you think is going to go on with Rosenstein? I mean, here's a guy who is defying the House. This is a guy who, as you pointed out in the last segment, should be or is the subject of the investigation himself. I mean, he's caught up in this whole thing. He's got a conflict of interest. Why can't Jeff Sessions see that he's got a conflict of interest? And why isn't anything happening to him? And will something happen to him after the election?
And why has no one brought that question in front of the courts? There have been 2 challenges to Mr. Mueller's illegitimacy. He is illegally appointed. The president's right about that. But neither one of them has raised the question of conflict. Now, I have come around to the view of others such as Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson that firing Rosenstein prior to the election would cause an unnecessary distraction and allow the mainstream media to put forward a Saturday night massacre type narrative. But afterwards, not only should Rosenstein be terminated, he should be arrested. What he engaged in is sedition. It is illegal. It's interesting. I was walking through National Airport on my way from Washington to South Florida, and I saw Rosenstein and the contingent of his bodyguards. And for an episecond, David, his eyes clicked on mine, captured on mine. And I saw I gave him the patented stone death stare, and I saw a look of fear. This man will end up as one of the great Quislings of history. He makes John Dean look like St. Thomas Aquinas. The man is literally a Quisling. And there is no doubt that he did, in fact, talk openly about wearing a wire to entrap the president of the United States to remove him under the 25th Amendment, something we reported here at InfoWars months before anyone else.
Look at what he did in the press conference that he held on the Friday before President Trump is going to have the summit with Putin to try to undermine that, to try to embarrass the president. I mean, that was the most open act of sabotage I've ever seen in my life. And that was publicly done. I mean, you don't have to question whether or not he would suggest wearing a wire to entrap President Trump.
But Laura Ingraham, who I like very much, had Reince Priebus, the first White House chief of staff, on her show last night, but never said, Reince, why did you recommend Rod Rosenstein? Why did you secure him his job as the number two man at the Justice Department, where today he is the de facto attorney general? Jeff Sessions' entire personal staff was selected by Rosenstein. Jeff Sessions is not allowed to burp without checking with Rod Rosenstein. He's a captive. One of two things is true. Either Sessions is mentally incapacitated, senile, or he's compromised. Pictures of him, perhaps, with a goat. Who knows?
Well, I have to see. I tell you what I think should also happen. If he doesn't fire him, most of the special counsels throughout history have been convened by presidents who would be investigating corrupt departments of justice or other bureaucracies. And I think President Trump needs to set up a special counsel to investigate Rosenstein and Mueller himself. Thank you for joining us, Roger Stone. You can find him at stonecoldtruth.com and also at InfoWars.com.